This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Night Road by Kristen Hanna, performed by Kathleen McInerney. Prologue, 2010. She stands at the hairpin turn on Night Road. On either side of her, giant evergreens grow clustered together, rising high into the blue summer sky. Even now, in midday, this stubbled, winding ribbon of asphalt holds the morning mist close. This road is like her life, knee-deep in shadow. Once, it had been the quickest way home, and she'd taken it easily, turning onto its potholed surface without a second thought, rarely noticing how the earth dropped away on either edge. Her mind had been on other things back then, on the minutiae of everyday life, chores, errands, schedules. She hadn't taken this route in years. Just the thought of it had been enough to make her turn the steering wheel too sharply. Better to go off the road than to find herself here. Or, so she'd thought, until today. People on the island still talk about what happened in the summer of 04. They sit on bar stools and in porch swings and spout opinions, half-truths, making judgments that aren't theirs to make. They think a few columns in a newspaper give them the facts they need, but the facts are hardly what matter. If anyone sees her here just standing on this lonely roadside in a gathering mist, it will all come up again. Like her, they'll remember that night, so long ago, when the rain turned to ash. Part 1. Midway upon the journey of our life, I found myself within a forest dark, for the straightforward pathway had been lost. The Inferno, by Dante Alighieri. Chapter 1, 2000. Lexi Bale had studied a Washington State map until the tiny red geographical markings shimmied in front of her tired eyes. There was a vaguely magical air about the place names. They hinted at a landscape she could hardly imagine, of snow-draped mountains that came right down to the water's edge, of trees as tall and straight as church steeples, of an endless, smogless blue sky. She pictured eagles perched on telephone poles and night skies filled with stars. Bears probably crept through the quiet subdivisions at night, looking for places that not long ago had been theirs. Her new home. She wanted to think that her life would be different there, but how could she believe that, really? At 14, she might not know much, but she knew this. Kids in the system were returnable, like old soda bottles and shoes that pinched your toes. Yesterday, she'd been wakened early by her caseworker and told to pack her things. Again. "I have good news," Mrs. Waters had said. Even half asleep, Lexi knew what that meant. "Another family. That's great. Thanks, Ms. Waters."
"Not just a family. Your family."
"Right, of course. My new family. It'll be great." Ms. Waters made that disappointed sound, a soft exhalation of breath that wasn't quite a sigh. "You've been strong, Lexi, for so long." Lexi tried to smile. "Don't feel bad, Mrs. W. I know how hard it is to place older kids, and the Rexler family was cool. If my mom hadn't come back, I think that one would have worked out."
"None of it was your fault, you know."
"Yeah," Lexi said. On good days, she could make herself believe that the people who turned her away had their own problems. On bad days, and they were coming more often lately,
She wondered what was wrong with her, why she was so easy to leave.
You have relatives, Lexi. I found your great aunt. Her name is Eva Lang. She's 66 years old and lives in Port George, Washington.
Lexi sat up.
What? My mom said I had no relatives.
Your mother was mistaken. You do have family.
Lexi had spent a lifetime waiting for those few precious words. Her world had always been dangerous, uncertain, a ship heading for the shoals. She had grown up mostly alone, among strangers, a modern-day feral child fighting for scraps of food and attention, never receiving enough of either. Most of it she'd blocked out entirely, but when she tried, when one of the state shrinks made her try, she could remember being hungry, wet, reaching out for a mother who was too high to hear her or too strung out to care. She remembered sitting for days in a dirty playpen, crying, waiting for someone to remember her existence. Now, she stared out the dirty window of a Greyhound bus. Her caseworker sat beside her, reading a romance novel. After more than 19 hours, they were finally nearing their destination. Outside, a steel-wool sky obliterated the treetops. Rain caused squiggling patterns on the window, blurring the view. It was like another planet here in Washington. Gone were the sun-scorched, bread-crust-colored hills of Southern California, and the gray crisscross of traffic-clogged freeways. The trees were steroid big. So were the mountains. Everything seemed overgrown and wild. The bus pulled up to a squat, cement-colored terminal and came to a wheezing, jerking stop. A cloud of black smoke wafted across her window, obscuring her view of the parking lot for a moment. Then the rain pounded it into nothingness. The bus doors whooshed open.
Lexi?
She heard Mrs. Waters' voice and thought, "Move, Lexi." But she couldn't do it. She looked up at the woman who had been the only steady presence in her life for the last 6 years. Every time a foster family gave up on Lexi, returned her like a piece of fruit gone bad, Mrs. Waters had been there, waiting, with a sad little smile. It wasn't much to return to, maybe, but it was all Lexi knew. And suddenly she was afraid to lose even that small familiarity.
"What if she doesn't come?"
Lexi asked. Mrs. Waters held out her hand, with its veiny, twig-like fingers and big knuckles. "She will." Lexi took a deep breath. She could do this. Of course she could. She had moved into 7 foster homes in the past 5 years and gone to 6 different schools in the same amount of time. She could handle this. She reached out for Mrs. Waters' hand. They walked single file down the narrow bus aisle, bumping the cushioned seats on either side of them. Off the bus, Lexi retrieved her banged-up blue suitcase, which was almost too heavy to carry, filled as it was with the only things that really mattered to her. Books. She dragged it to the very edge of the sidewalk and stood there, perched at the rim of the curb. It felt like a dangerous drop-off, that little cliff of concrete. One wrong step could break a bone or send her headlong into traffic. Mrs. Waters came up beside Lexi, opening an umbrella. The rain made a thumping sound on the stretched nylon. One by one, the passengers disembarked from the bus and disappeared. Lexi looked out at the empty parking lot and wanted to cry. How many times had she been in exactly this position? Every time Mama dried out, she came back for her daughter.
"Give me another chance, baby girl. Tell the nice judge here you love me. I'll be better this time. I won't forget about you no more."
And every time, Lexi waited. She probably changed her mind.
"That won't happen, Lexi."
"It could."
"You have family, Lexi."
Ms. Waters repeated the terrifying words, and Lexi slipped. Hope tiptoed in. Family. She dared to test out the unfamiliar word. It melted on her tongue like candy, leaving sweetness behind. A battered blue Ford Fairlane pulled up in front of them and parked. The car was dented along the fender and dirty. Duct tape crisscrossed a cracked window. The driver's door opened slowly, and a woman emerged. She was short and gray-haired, with watery brown eyes, and the kind of diamond-patterned skin that came with heavy smoking. Amazingly, she looked familiar, like an older, wrinkled version of Mama. At that, the impossible word came back to Lexi, swollen now with meaning. Family. Alexa? The woman said in a scratchy voice. Lexi couldn't make herself answer. She wanted this woman to smile or maybe even hug her. But Eva Lang just stood there, her dried apple face turned into a deep frown.
I'm your great aunt, your grandmother's sister.
I never knew my grandmother, was all Lexi could think of to say.
All this time I thought you were living with your daddy's people.
I don't have a dad. I mean, I don't know who he is. Mama didn't know. Aunt Eva sighed.
I know that now, thanks to Ms. Waters here. Is that all your stuff?
Lexi felt a wave of shame. It was all she had. Just the one suitcase.
Yeah.
Mrs. Waters gently took the suitcase from Lexi and put it in the back seat. Go on, Lexi, get in the car. Your aunt wants you to live with her.
Yeah, for now.
Mrs. Waters pulled Lexi into a fierce hug, whispering, Don't be afraid. Lexi almost hung on too long. At the last second, before it turned embarrassing, she let go and stumbled free. She went to the battered car and wrenched the door open. It rattled and pinged and swung wide. Inside, the car had two brown vinyl bench seats with cracked seams that burped up a gray padding. It smelled like a mixture of mint and smoke, as if a million menthol cigarettes had been smoked within. Lexi sat as close to the door as possible. Through the cracked window, she waved at Mrs. Waters, watching her caseworker disappear into the gray haze as they drove away. She let her fingertips graze the cold glass, as if a little touch like that could connect her with a woman she could no longer see.
I was sorry to hear about your mama passing, Aunt Eva said after a long and uncomfortable silence. She's in a better place now. That must be a comfort to you.
Lexi had never known what to say to that. It was a sentiment she'd heard from every stranger who'd ever taken her in. Poor Lexi, with her dead drug addict mother. But no one really knew what Mama's life had been like. The men, the heroin, the vomiting, the pain. Or how terrible the end had been. Only Lexi knew all of that. She stared out the window at this new place of hers. It was bold and green and dark, even in the middle of the day. After a few miles, a sign welcomed them to the Port George Reservation. Here there were Native American symbols everywhere. Carved orca whales marked the shop fronts. Manufactured homes sat on untended lots, many of them with rusting cars or appliances in the yard. On this late August afternoon, empty fireworks stands attested to the recent holiday, and a glittering casino was being built on a hillside overlooking the Sound. Signs led the way to the Chief South Mobile Home Park. Aunt Eva drove through the park and pulled up in front of a yellow and white double-wide trailer. In the misty rain, it looked blurred somehow, rounded with disappointment. Plastic gray pots full of leggy, dying petunias guarded the front door, which was painted Easter egg blue. In the front window, a pair of plaid curtains hung like a pair of fabric hourglasses, cinched in the middle, with strands of fuzzy yellow yarn.
"It isn't much," Aunt Eva said, looking ashamed. "I rent from the tribe."
Lexi didn't know what to say. If her aunt had seen some of the places Lexi had lived in her life, she wouldn't have made excuses for this pretty little trailer.
"It's nice."
"Come on," her aunt said, turning off the engine.
Lexi followed her aunt across a gravel path and up to the front door. Inside, the mobile home was neat as a pin. A small L-shaped kitchen sidled up to a dining area that held a yellow-speckled formica and chrome table with four metal chairs. In the living room, a plaid love seat and two blue vinyl lazy boys faced a TV on a metal stand. On the end table, there were two pictures, one of an old woman with horn-rimmed glasses, and one of Elvis. The air smelled like cigarette smoke and fake flowers. There were purple air fresheners hanging from almost every knob in the kitchen.
"Sorry if the place kinda smells. I quit smoking last week, when I found out about you,"
Aunt Eva said, turning to look at Lexi.
"Secondhand smoke and kids is a bad mix, right?"
A strange feeling unfurled inside of Lexi. It was bird-like, fluttery, and so foreign she didn't recognize the emotion right away. Hope. "Don't care. Don't care." She tried to follow her own advice, but she couldn't do it. This woman, this aunt, had quit smoking for her. And she'd taken Lexi in when obviously money was tight. She looked at the woman, wanting to say something, but nothing came out. She was afraid she might jinx everything with the wrong word.
"I'm kinda out of my depth here, Lexi,"
Aunt Eva finally said.
"Oscar and me, he was my husband. We never had kids. Tried, just didn't. So I don't know about raising kids. If you're gonna be..."
"I'll be good, I swear it. Don't change your mind, please. If you keep me, you won't be sorry."
"If I keep you?"
Aunt Eva pursed her thin lips, gave a little frown.
"Your mama sure did a number on you. Can't say I'm surprised. She broke my sister's heart, too."
"She was good at hurting people," Lexi said quietly.
"We're family," Eva said.
"I don't really know what that means."
Aunt Eva smiled, but it was sad, that smile, and it wounded Lexi, reminded her that she was a little broken. Life with Mama had left its mark.
"It means you're staying here with me. And I guess you'd best just call me Eva from now on, 'cause that aunt bit is gonna get old fast."
She started to turn away. Lexi reached out and grabbed her aunt's thin wrist, feeling the velvety soft skin wrinkle in her grasp. She hadn't meant to do it, shouldn't have done it, but it was too late now.
"What is it, Lexi?"
her aunt said, frowning. Lexi could hardly form the two small words. They felt like a pair of stones in her tight throat. But she had to say them. Had to.
"Thank you," she said, her eyes stinging. "I won't cause you any trouble. I swear it."
"You probably will,"
Eva said. And finally, she smiled.
"You're a teenager, right? But it's okay, Lexi. It's okay. I've been alone a long time. I'm glad you're here."
Lexi could only nod. She'd been alone a long time, too. Jude Faraday hadn't slept at all last night. Finally, just before dawn, she gave up even trying. Peeling back the summer weight comforter, taking care not to wake her sleeping husband, she got out of bed and left her bedroom. Opening the French doors quietly, she stepped outside and watched the sunrise. In the emergent light, her backyard glistened with dew. Lush green grass sloped gently down to a sandy gray pebbled beach. Beyond it, the sound was a series of charcoal-colored waves that rolled and rolled, their peaks painted orange by the dawn. On the opposite shore, the Olympic mountain range was a jagged line of pink and lavender. She stepped into the orange plastic gardening clogs that were always by this door and went into her garden. This patch of land was more than just her pride and joy. It was her sanctuary. Here, hunkered down in the rich black earth, she planted and replanted, divided and pruned. Within these low stone walls, she had created a world that was wholly defined by beauty and order. The things she planted in this ground stayed where she put them. They sent out roots that ran deep into this land. No matter how cold and bitter the winter, or how driving the rainstorms, her beloved plants came back to life, returning with the seasons. Over the years, as this garden bloomed and matured, so too had her children.
"You're up early."
She turned. Her husband stood on the stone patio, just outside their bedroom door. In a pair of black boxer shorts, with his too long, graying blonde hair still tangled from sleep, he looked like some sexy classics professor, or a just-past-his-prime rock star. No one wonder she'd fallen in love with him at first sight, more than 24 years ago. She kicked off the orange clogs and walked along the stone path from the garden to the patio. "I couldn't sleep," she confessed. He took her in his arms.
"It's the first day of school."
And there it was, the thing that had crept into her sleep like a burglar and ruined her peace.
"I can't believe they're starting high school.
They were just in kindergarten a second ago."
"It's going to be an interesting ride, seeing who they become in the next 4 years."
"Interesting for you," she said. "You're in the stands watching the game. I'm down on the field taking the hits. I'm terrified something will go wrong."
"What can go wrong? They're smart, curious, loving kids. They've got everything going for them."
"What can go wrong? Are you kidding? It's dangerous out there, Miles. We've been able to keep them safe up until now, but high school is different."
"You're going to have to let up a little, you know."
It was the sort of thing he said to her all the time. A lot of people gave her the same advice, actually, and had for years. She'd been criticized for holding the reins of parenthood too tightly, of controlling her children too completely, but she didn't know how to let go. From the moment she'd first decided to become a mother, it had been an epic battle. She had suffered through 3 miscarriages before the twins, and there had been month after month when the arrival of her period had sent her into a gray and hazy depression. Then, a miracle. She'd conceived again. The pregnancy had been difficult, always tenuous, and she'd been sentenced to almost 6 months of bed rest. Every day as she'd lain in that bed, imagining her babies, she'd pictured it as a war, a battle of wills. She'd held on with all her heart. "Not yet," she finally said. "They're only 14.
"Jude," he said, sighing. "Just a little. That's all I'm saying. You check their homework every day, and chaperone every dance, and organize every school function. You make them breakfast, and drive them everywhere they need to go. You clean their rooms and wash their clothes. If they forget to do their chores, you make excuses and do it all yourself. They're not spotted owls. Let them loose a little."
"What should I give up? If I stop checking homework, Mia will stop doing it. Or maybe I should quit calling their friends' parents to make sure the kids are going where they say they're going. When I was in high school, we had keggers every weekend, and two of my girlfriends got pregnant. I need to keep better track of them now, trust me. So many things can go wrong in the next 4 years. I need to protect them. Once they go to college, I'll relax. I promise.
The right college,
he teased. But they both knew it wasn't really a joke. The twins were freshmen in high school, and Jude had already begun to research colleges. She looked up at him, wanting him to understand. He thought she was too invested in their children, and she understood his concern. But she was a mother, and she didn't know how to be casual about it. She knew how it felt to be your mother's last concern. She couldn't stand the thought that her children would grow up as she had, feeling unloved.
"You're nothing like her, Jude,"
he said quietly, and she loved him for saying it. She rested against him. Together they watched the day brighten, and Miles finally said,
"Well, I better get up. I have a surgery at 10.
She kissed him deeply, then followed him back into the house. After a quick shower, she dried her shoulder-length blonde hair, put on a thin layer of makeup, and dressed in jeans and an oversized, lightweight cashmere sweater. Opening her dresser drawer, she withdrew two small, wrapped packages, one for each of her children. Taking them with her, she walked out of her bedroom, down the wide, slate hallway. With morning sunlight streaming through the floor-to-ceiling windows, this house, constructed mostly of glass and stone and exotic woods, seemed almost to glow from within. On this main floor, every viewpoint boasted some decorating treasure. Jude had spent 4 years huddled with architects and designers to make this home spectacular, and her every dream for it had been realized. Upstairs, it was a different story. Here, at the top of a floating stone and copper stairway, it was Kidland, a giant media room, complete with big-screen TV and a pool table, dominated the east side of the house. Additionally, there were two large bedrooms, each with their own ensuite bathrooms. At Mia's bedroom door, she knocked perfunctorily and went inside. As expected, she found her 14-year-old daughter sprawled on top of the blankets in her four-postered bed, asleep. There were clothes everywhere, like shrapnel from some mythic explosion, heaped and piled and kicked aside. Mia was actively engaged in a search for identity, and each new attempt required a radical clothing change. Jude sat down on the edge of the bed and stroked the soft blonde hair that fell across Mia's cheek. For a moment, time fell away. Suddenly, she was a young mother again, looking down at a cherubic girl with corn silk hair and a gummy grin, who'd followed her twin brother around like a little shadow. They'd been like puppies, scrambling over each other in their exuberant play, chattering non-stop in their secret language, laughing, tumbling off sofa and steps and laps. From the very start, Zack had been the leader of this pair. He'd spoken first and most often. Mia hadn't uttered a real word until after her fourth birthday. She hadn't needed to. Her brother was there for her, then and now. They'd been so close that change and danger had crept up slowly, almost without Jude's noticing it. Zack had bloomed in junior high. There was no other word for it. With his two long wheat-blonde hair, bottle-green eyes, and room-lighting smile, he'd grown into the kind of confidence that brought friends to him like moths to a flame. Mia, on the other hand, had closed up in those same years, become so painfully shy that sometimes her teachers couldn't even remember if she'd been in class, Zack tried to include his sister in every part of his life, but it wasn't easy. Mia instinctively hung back. Every time Jude looked at her daughter, she felt Mia's loneliness like a blow to the heart. "Hey, baby," she said. Mia rolled over sleepily and opened her eyes, blinking slowly. Her pale, heart-shaped face, with its gorgeous bone structure, inherited from her father, was an acne battlefield that no amount of care had yet been able to clear. Multicolored rubber bands looped through her braces.
"Hola, madre."
"It's the first day of high school." Mia grimaced.
"Shoot me. Really."
"It'll be better than middle school.
You'll see."
Mia sighed.
"Says you. Can't you homeschool me?"
"Remember sixth grade, when I tried to help you with your math homework?"
"Disaster,"
Mia said glumly.
"It could be better now, though. I wouldn't get so mad at you."
Jude stroked her daughter's soft hair. "You can't hide out from life, Poppet."
"I don't want to hide out from life, just from high school. It's like swimming with sharks, Mom. Honest, I could lose a foot."
Jude couldn't help smiling. "See? You have a great sense of humor."
"That's what they say when they're trying to set up an ugly girl. Thanks, Madre. And who cares anyway? It's not like I have friends."
"Yes, you do."
"No. Zack has friends who try to be nice to his loser sister. It's not the same thing."
For years, Jude had moved heaven and earth to make her children happy. But this was one battle she couldn't fight. It wasn't easy to be the shy twin sister of the most popular boy in school. "I have a present for you."
"Really?"
Mia sat up.
"What is it?"
"Open it." Jude offered the small, wrapped box. Mia ripped open the box. Inside lay a thin, pink leather diary with a gleaming brass lock. "I had one when I was your age, and I wrote down everything that happened to me. It can help, writing stuff down. I was shy too, you know."
"But you were beautiful."
"You're beautiful, Mia. I wish you saw that."
"Yeah, right. Zits and braces are all the rage."
"Just be open to people, okay, Mia? This is a new school. Make it a new opportunity, okay?"
"Mom, I've been going to school with the same kids since kindergarten. I don't think a new address is going to help. Besides, I tried being open. With Haley, remember?"
"That was more than a year ago, Mia. It doesn't do any good to focus on the bad things that happen. Today is the first day of high school. A new start."
"Okay."
Mia tried gamely to smile. "Good. Now, get out of bed. I want to get to school early today so I can help you find your locker and get you settled into first period. You have Mr. Davies for geometry. I want him to know how well you did on the WASL test." Mia groaned.
"You are not walking me into class, and I can find my locker by myself, too."
Intellectually, Jude knew that Mia was right, but Jude wasn't ready to let go. Not yet. Too many things could go wrong. Mia was fragile, too easily flustered. What if someone made fun of her? A mother's job was to protect her kids, whether they wanted it or not. She stood up. "I'll be practically invisible. You'll see. No one will even know I'm there." Chapter 2. On the first day of school, Lexi woke early and staggered down the narrow hallway to the bathroom. One look in the mirror confirmed her worst fears. Her skin was pale, a little sallow even, and her blue eyes were puffy and bloodshot. She must have cried in her sleep again. She took a quick, lukewarm shower, careful not to waste her aunt's money. There was no real point in drying her hair. The waist-length black strands would curl and frizz and do whatever they wanted to. So she pulled it all back into a ponytail and went back to her room. There, she opened her closet door and stared at the few articles of clothing she owned. There were so few choices. What did kids wear here? Would Pine Island be like Brentwood or the Hills, where kids dressed like avant-garde fashion models? Or East L.A., where rap star wannabes and grungeoids filled the classrooms? There was a knock at her bedroom door, so quiet that at first Lexi barely heard it. She made her bed quickly and then opened the door. Eva stood there, holding a cotton candy pink sweatshirt with a rhinestone butterfly bedazzled onto the front. The kidney-shaped wings were purple and yellow and shamrock green.
"I've got this for you at work yesterday. I figured every girl should have something new to wear on the first day of high school."
It was the ugliest thing Lexi had ever seen, better suited to a 4-year-old than a 14-year-old. But she loved it instantly. No one had ever bought her something special for the first day of school. "It's perfect," she said, feeling a tightening in her throat. She'd only lived with her aunt for 4 days, and every hour she felt a little more at home. It scared her, that settling in. She knew how dangerous it could be to start liking a place, a person.
"You don't have to wear it if you don't want to. I just thought,
I can't wait to wear it. Thanks, Eva." Her aunt gave her a smile so bright it bunched up her cheeks.
"I told Mildred you'd like it."
"I do." Eva bobbed her head in a little nod and backed into the hallway, closing the door behind her. Lexi put on the pink sweatshirt and stepped into a pair of faded Target jeans. Then she filled her hand-me-down backpack with the notebooks, paper, and pens Eva had brought home from work last night. In the kitchen, she found Eva standing by the sink, dressed now for work in her blue Walmart smock, lemon-yellow acrylic sweater, and jeans, drinking coffee. Across the small, tidy space, their gazes met. Eva's brown eyes looked worried.
"Mrs. Waters worked hard to get you into Pine Island High. It's one of the best schools in the state. But the school bus don't come over the bridge, so you'll have to take the county bus. Is that okay? Have I already told you all this?"
Lexi nodded. "It's fine, Eva. Don't worry. I've been riding buses for years." She didn't add that she'd often slept on their dirty seats when she and Mama had nowhere else to go.
"Okay, then."
Eva finished her coffee and rinsed out her cup, leaving it in the sink.
"Well, you don't want to be late on your first day. I'll drive you. Let's go."
"I can take the bus."
"Not on the first day. I got the late shift special."
Lexi followed her aunt out to the car. As they drove toward the island, Lexi studied her surroundings. She'd seen all of this on maps, but those little lines and markings only told so much of the story. For instance, she knew that Pine Island was 12 miles long and 4 miles wide, that it was accessible by ferry to downtown Seattle and by bridge to Kitsap County and the mainland. On the Port George side of the bridge, the land was tribal. Pine Island, she saw now, was not. She could tell by the houses that the people who lived on the island were rich. The houses over here were practically mansions. They turned off the highway and drove up a hill to the high school, which was a collection of squat red brick buildings huddled around a flagpole. Like many of the schools Lexi had attended, Pine Island had obviously grown faster than expected. A collection of portables ringed the main campus. Eva parked in the empty bus lane and looked at Lexi.
"These kids are no better than you. You remember that?"
Lexi felt a rush of affection for this careworn woman who'd taken her in.
"I'll be fine,"
Lexi said.
You don't have to worry about me.
Eva nodded.
Good luck,
she said at last. Lexi didn't say that luck was useless at a new high school. Instead, she forced a smile and got out of the car. As she waved goodbye, a school bus pulled up behind Eva, and kids poured out of it. Lexi kept her eyes down and started moving. She'd been the new girl often enough to know the tricks of the camouflage trade. The best tactic was to blend in, disappear. You did that by looking down and moving fast. Rule 1, never stop. Rule 2, never look up. By Friday, if she'd followed this pattern, she'd just be one of the kids in the freshman class, and then she could try to make a friend or two. Although, it wouldn't be easy here. What could she possibly have in common with these kids? When she made it to Building A, she double-checked her schedule. There it was, room 104. She merged into the crowd of students, all of whom seemed to know each other, and let their tide move her forward. In the classroom, kids slid into their seats and kept talking excitedly. Her mistake was to pause. She looked up just long enough to get her bearings, and the classroom went quiet. Kids stared at her. Then whispering began. Someone laughed. Lexi felt her flaws keenly. Her thick black eyebrows and crooked teeth and frizzy hair. Her lame jeans and lamer sweatshirt. This was the kind of place where every kid got braces at adolescence and a new car at 16. She stood there, frozen. She knew better than to look up. So why had she done it? In the back of the room, a girl pointed at her and started to giggle. The girl beside her nodded. Lexi thought she heard, "Nice butterfly," and then, "Did she make it herself?" A boy stood up, and the room went quiet again. Lexi knew who he was. Every school had a guy like him. Good-looking, popular, athletic. The kind of boy who got what he wanted without even trying. The football captain and class president. In his aqua blue Abercrombie t-shirt and baggy jeans, he looked like Leonardo DiCaprio, all golden and smiling and sure of himself. He was coming toward her. Why? Was there another prettier girl behind her? Was he going to do something to humiliate her, to make his friends laugh? He came to a stop in front of her.
"Hey,"
he said. She could feel everyone looking at them, watching. Lexi bit her lower lip to hide her crooked teeth.
"Hey,"
he smiled.
"Susan and Liz are bitches,"
he whispered, leaning toward her.
"Don't let them get to you. The butterfly's cool."
She stood there like an idiot, dazzled by his smile. "Get a grip, Lexi. You've seen good-looking guys before." She should say something. Smile. Something.
"Here,"
he said, taking her arm. At his touch, she felt a little jolt, like an electrical charge. She thought maybe he felt it too, because he should have moved, led her somewhere. That was why he was touching her arm, right? But he just stood there, staring down at her. His smile slowly faded. She couldn't breathe all of a sudden. The whole world drained away until only his face was left, only his amazing green eyes. Do I want what? Before he could answer, someone yelled something. Lexi's heart was pounding so fast she couldn't hear the words, just the noise. And then he was being pulled away from her, led away by some girl in a skirt that was smaller than a dinner napkin. Lexi stayed a moment too long, staring at his back, still feeling out of breath. Then she remembered where she was and who she was. The new girl in the bedazzled pink sweatshirt.
Tucking her chin into her chest, she bolted forward, made her way to a seat in the back row. She slid onto its slick surface just as the bell rang and the teacher closed the door. As the teacher droned on about the early days of Seattle, she replayed that moment over and over. She told herself it meant nothing, the way he'd touched her. But she couldn't let it go. What had he been going to ask her?
Do you want?
When the class ended, she dared to look at him. He moved with the crowd of students, laughing at something the girl in the miniskirt said. At Lexi's desk, he paused, looked down at her, although he didn't smile or stop. He kept moving. Of course he didn't stop. She rose slowly and walked to the door. For the rest of the morning, she tried to hold her head high as she moved through the crowded halls. But by noon, she was lagging, and the worst was yet to come. Lunch in a new high school was hell. You never knew what was in and what was out, and the whole social order could be upset if you dared to sit where you weren't supposed to. At the door to the cafeteria, Lexi paused. Just the idea of walking in there, being scrutinized and judged, was more than she could bear today. Normally, she was stronger than that. But Mr. Popular had unbalanced her somehow, made her want the impossible. And she knew firsthand how waylaid one could be by longing. It was a waste of time. She walked back outside, where the sun was shining. She dug through her backpack, found the lunch Eva had packed for her, and a well-read copy of Jane Eyre. Some kids had stuffed animals or special childhood blankets. Lexi had Jane. She walked idly through campus, looking for a place to sit down and read while she ate her lunch. Across the campus, she spied a pretty little tree growing up from a triangular patch of grass. But it wasn't the tree that caught her attention. It was the girl sitting cross-legged on the grass beneath its green canopy, hunched over a book. Her blonde hair was divided into a pair of loosely twined braids. Dressed in a delicate pink tulle skirt, a black tank top, and black high tops, she definitely made a statement. It was a statement Lexi understood. I'm not like you. I don't need you. Lexi had spent a few years dressed the same way herself, back when she hadn't wanted to make friends, when she'd been afraid of being asked where she lived or what her mama was like. She took a deep breath and walked toward the girl. When she drew near, Lexi paused. She wanted to say the right thing, but now that she was here, she didn't know what that would be. The girl looked up from her book. She was fragile-looking, with acne-blistered skin and green eyes that were rimmed with too much purple eyeliner. Brightly colored rubber bands accented her braces. Hey, Lexi said. He's not here, and he's not coming. Who? The girl gave a disinterested shrug and went back to reading. If you don't know, it doesn't matter, does it? Can I sit with you? Social suicide, the girl said, without looking up. What? The girl looked up again. It's social suicide to sit with me. Even the theater kids won't hang with me. Yeah, it's that bad. You mean I won't make the cheerleading squad? How tragic. The girl looked interested in Lexi for the first time. A smile quirked her mouth. Most girls care about stuff like that. Do they? Lexi dropped her backpack onto the grass. What are you reading? Wuthering Heights. Lexi held out her own book. Jane Eyre. Can I sit down? The girl scooted sideways to make room on the small patch of grass. I haven't read that one. Is it good? Lexi sat down beside her. My favorite. When you're done with yours, we could trade. That would be awesome. I'm Mia, by the way. Lexi. So, what's the book about? Mia began talking slowly, stumbling over her words. But when she started talking about Heathcliff, she kind of took flight. The next thing Lexi knew, they were laughing as if they'd been friends for years. When the bell rang, they got up and walked toward their lockers together, still talking the whole way across campus. Lexi didn't keep her head down anymore, didn't clamp her books to her chest, or purposely not make eye contact with anyone. Instead, she laughed. Outside the door to her Spanish class, Mia stopped and said in a rush,
"You could come to my house after school today, if you wanted to, I mean."
She looked nervous as she asked it.
"I know you probably won't. No worries."
Lexi felt like smiling. Only nervousness over her teeth kept her in check.
"I would totally like that. Meet me at the flagpole by the admin building, okay?"
Lexi went into her classroom and took a seat at the back. She eyed the clock for the rest of the day, willing time to speed up, until finally, at 2:50, she was at the flagpole, waiting. Kids swarmed around her, jostling one another as they made their way onto the buses lined up outside. Maybe Mia wouldn't show. Probably she wouldn't. Lexi was about to give up the whole thing when Mia came up beside her.
"You waited," she said, sounding as relieved as Lexi felt. "Come on."
Mia led the way through the hive of students toward a shiny black Escalade parked out on the main road. She opened the passenger door and climbed in. Lexi followed her new friend into the leather-scented beige seat.
"Hola, madre," Mia said. "This is Lexi Bale. I invited her home with me. Is that okay?"
The woman in the driver's seat turned around, and Lexi was stunned by her beauty. Mia's mom looked like Michelle Pfeiffer, with her perfect pale face and sleek blonde hair. In an obviously expensive salmon-colored sweatsuit, she looked like she belonged on the Nordstrom catalog cover.
"Hello, Lexi. I'm Jude. It's nice to meet you. And how is it that I don't know you?"
"I just moved here."
"Ah, that explains it. Where did you move here from?"
"California."
"I won't hold that against you," Jude said with a bright smile. "Will your mother mind if you're not home right away?"
"No,"
Lexi said, tensing for the inevitable next question.
"I could call her if you'd like,
"Mom," Mia said, "you're doing that thing again."
Jude flashed Lexi a smile. "I'm embarrassing my daughter. Something I am sadly want to do these days, just by breathing. But I can hardly stop being a mother, can I? I'm sure your mom is just as embarrassing, right, Lexi?"
Lexi had no idea what to say to that, but it didn't matter. Jude laughed and went on as if she hadn't asked a thing.
"I'm supposed to be seen and not heard. Fine. Buckle up, girls."
She started up the car, and Mia immediately started talking about a book she'd heard about. They drove away from the school and into a pretty little town. The traffic was stop and go all the way through town, but once they made it onto the highway, the road was clear. They followed one curvy, tree-lined, two-lane road after another, until Jude said,
"Home, sweet home,"
and turned onto a gravel driveway. At first, there was nothing but trees on either side of them, trees so tall and thick they blocked out the sun. But then the road curved again, and they were in a clearing full of sunlight. Jude parked the car in a big garage, and they all got out. The house was like something out of a novel. It sat proudly amidst its landscaping, a soaring structure made of wood and stone, with windows everywhere. Low stone walls delineated magnificent gardens. Behind it all was the blue sound. Even from here, Lexi could hear waves hitting the shore.
"Wow,"
Lexi said, coming to a stop. She had never been in a house like this before. How should she act? What should she say? She would do the wrong thing for sure, and Mia would laugh at her. Jude slipped an arm around her daughter, and they walked ahead.
I bet you girls are hungry. Why don't I make you some quesadillas? You can tell me about the first day of high school.
Lexi hung back instinctively. At the front door, Mia looked back.
Lexi? You don't want to come in, do you? You've changed your mind.
Lexi felt her insecurity dissolve, or perhaps more accurately, it joined with Mia's and morphed into something else. They were alike. Impossibly, the girl who had nothing was like this girl who had everything, inside where it mattered. They were alike.
No way, Lexi said, laughing as she hurried toward the door.
Inside, she slipped out of her shoes, seeing a second too late that her socks had holes in the toes. Embarrassed, she followed Mia into the magnificent house. There were walls of glass that framed a stunning ocean view, a stone fireplace, gleaming floors. She was afraid to touch anything. Mia grabbed her hand and dragged her into a huge kitchen. There were gleaming copper pots hanging from a black skeletal thing above the 8-burner stove, and fresh flowers in several places around the room. They sat down at a long black granite counter while Jude made quesadillas.
She just walked right up to me, Madre, and I told her it was social suicide to sit with me, but she didn't care. Is that cool or what?
Jude smiled at that and started to say something, but Mia kept talking. Lexi could hardly keep up with Mia's steady stream of stories. It was as if Mia had been holding observations and thoughts inside of her for years, and now they were coming out. Lexi knew about that, about holding things inside and being afraid and trying to stay quiet. She and Mia compared opinions on high school, boys, classes, movies, tattoos, belly button piercings, and they agreed on everything. The more they agreed on, the more Lexi worried. What would happen when Mia found out about Lexi's past? Would Mia want to be friends with a drug addict's kid? At about 5 o'clock, the front door banged open, and a group of kids burst into the house.
Shoes!
Jude yelled from the kitchen without looking up. 9 or 10 kids surged forward, boys and girls. Lexi could tell they were the popular kids. Anyone would have recognized them. Pretty girls in low-rise jeans and midriff-bearing t-shirts, and boys in PIHS blue and yellow sweats. They'd probably come here from football and cheerleader practice.
My bro is the one in the gray sweats, Mia said, leaning closer. Don't judge him by the company he keeps. Those girls have the brains of breath mints.
It was the guy from first period. He peeled away from the crowd with the ease of one who knew how popular he was and sidled up to Mia, putting an arm around her shoulders. The resemblance between them was startling. Mia's face was a feminine, sculpted version of his. He started to say something to his sister, and then he noticed Lexi. His gaze sharpened, grew so intense she felt that fluttering start in her chest again. No one had ever looked at her like that before, as if everything about her was interesting.
You're the new girl, he said quietly,
pushing the long blonde hair out of his eyes.
She's my friend, Mia said,
grinning so wide her braces were a multicolored blur. His smile faded. The look in his eyes turned cold, almost hostile.
Really?
I'm Lexi, she said,
although he hadn't asked her her name. He looked away from her, disinterested.
I'm Zach.
A girl in tiny shorts and a midriff-bearing top moved in behind him, draped herself along his side, and whispered something in his ear. He didn't laugh, barely smiled, in fact. Instead, he backed away from Lexi and Mia.
Later, Mimai,
he said to his sister. Slinging an arm around Short Short's girl, he led her toward the stairs and disappeared into the crowd of kids running up